Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I'm your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, and the man who calls everything right down the middle. Dion Tyre Gordon, enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. NFL Super Wild Card Weekend in the books, all six games completed. And before we go any further, in the interest of transparency and maintaining integrity, and just being an honest, forthcoming, upright, good citizen that uses both left and right turn indicators in traffic, as a good person, I gotta apologize. I gotta issue an apology to the Houston Texans and the Green Bay Packers. I'm sorry. I wholeheartedly apologize. I counted both of your teams out. I said neither one of you were ready for this moment. Young football teams. Green Bay is the youngest team in the NFL, I think. Average age about 25 years old. I said neither of these teams are ready to win a playoff game. They're just happy to be here. Both teams wet behind the ears. Breath smells like Similac. Babies still growing up in the NFL. I was wrong. I was emphatically wrong. 45-14, Houston over Cleveland. I was wrong. Green Bay 48, Dallas 32. I was wrong. It's okay to say that. Transparency, accountability. These are good things. You don't see that or hear that too often in our current society, but these are good things, and we try to practice good behavior and good habits, good tendencies, being a good person over here at the Dion Gordon Podcast. I apologize to D'Amico Ryans, the head coach of the Houston Texans, the man who should be the front runner for NFL head coach of the year, the man who should be the front runner for NFL offensive rookie of the year, CJ Stroud. I apologize to CJ Stroud. Good young quarterback. Look forward to seeing him play. I'll take a victory lap on this. I told people CJ Stroud is going to be better than Bryce Young. So far, so good. I know it's only been one season. Both men are still rookies. I know Bryce Young is surrounded by absolute bullshit in Carolina. From top to bottom, a hideous organization, a trash football team. I know, I understand that, but I just looked at both men. In particular, the physical size. One guy is 6'3", the other one's about, I don't know, 4'11". And I'm like, wait a minute. They're playing quarterback in the NFL. You kind of got to be a certain height in a certain way. 6'3", I like that better than 5'9 or 5'8 or whatever Bryce Young is. But I told people CJ Stroud is going to be the better of the two quarterbacks. I apologize, CJ. I doubted you. I counted you out. I apologize to the late, great Pimp C, Bun B, UGK, Mike Jones. Who? Mike Jones. 281-330-8004. I apologize to Slim Thug, to Paul Wall. I apologize to the trash cans that the Houston Astros were beating on to illegally send signals and messages to help them win baseball games. I apologize to the city of Houston, Texas. I apologize to every Houston Texans fan. I'm sorry. I apologize to J.J. Watt, Andre Johnson, Arian Foster. I am very much sorry. I apologize to everybody in and around affiliated with the Houston Texans. I also apologize to Jordan Love, a quarterback that once upon a time I was kind of hoping, kind of wishing that my beloved San Francisco 49ers would select in the 2020 NFL draft. I was already done with that scumbag Garoppolo coming off the Super Bowl 54 loss. I was kind of thinking we need to go in a different direction. We need a younger quarterback, more athletic, can make all the throws, and we saw that on full display in that playoff game against Dallas. Jordan Love put on a throwing exhibition. Any arm angle, any launch point, 1 foot off the ground, both feet off the ground, the guy's hovering in midair, throwing strikes, throwing darts, throwing dots, being deadly accurate, committing surgery against the Dallas Cowboys defense. That was magical. A spectacular performance by Jordan Love. Congratulations to him. Matt LaFleur, excellent head coaching job. Nobody saw the Green Bay Packers even making the playoffs this season, especially in the middle of the season. They were struggling. They were a floundering football team, but they picked up the pieces, have turned it around. In particular, Jordan Love, 22 touchdown passes, one pick since week 11. That's a great job on his behalf. It's also a testament to the coaching in Green Bay, Matt LaFleur has done a tremendous job this season with that young Green Bay Packer football team. They kicked the Dallas Cowboys' ass. The last time somebody got fucked up that badly in Dallas, Texas, was when John F. Kennedy got shot. That game was a massacre. Overall, for the weekend, six games, my predictions, I made the previous podcast making predictions about the outcome of all six of these games and who I thought was going to win and what I thought was going to happen. Three games correct, three games incorrect. It is what it is. I didn't put any money on these games this weekend, didn't feel like it, but I got to say, two out of the three games I was right about were so obvious, so easy to see. Miami had no chance at all walking into a cold and frigid Kansas City, Missouri, and trying to come out with a victory against the Chiefs at Arrowhead. They don't lose playoff games at Arrowhead that often. Specifically, in the Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes era, they've only lost twice at home when Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have been together as head coach and quarterback. 2018 AFC Championship against Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. They took a loss that day. Patriots advanced to Super Bowl 53, where New England and Brady and Belichick won their sixth Super Bowl. And then 2021, at home, AFC Championship again. Joe Burrow took Cincinnati into Arrowhead and came out with the victory. 2 weeks later, the Bengals lost Super Bowl 56 to the LA Rams, but only twice that I can think of did somebody roll into Arrowhead Stadium and beat Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. In no way, shape, or form was Tua Tagovailoa going to pull that off. Get the fuck out of here. I knew two of those games were surefire locks. Kansas City over Miami and Buffalo over Pittsburgh. Saw that coming. Kind of went out on a limb and picked Tampa to beat Philadelphia, but based off what I saw at the conclusion of the season, with Philadelphia being the drizzling shits down the stretch, 1-5 ever since that ass-whooping they took at the hands of the mighty San Francisco 49ers on December 3rd, 42-19 San Francisco, scoring touchdowns on six consecutive drives, they took the heart and soul from the Philadelphia Eagles. They fucked them up. They punished them. They took their heart out their chest. They ruined them. Legend has it, according to the history books, the Liberty Bell was cracked in 1752. In reality, the Liberty Bell got cracked on December 3rd, 2023 by Brock Purdy and the San Francisco 49ers. I knew the Eagles were not the same football team since that ass-whooping, since they got earth, wind, fire, and ice beaten out of them by the mighty San Francisco 49ers. The other games, the games that I lost, like I said, I thought Houston and Green Bay just simply weren't ready yet. I tried to give the Dallas Cowboys the benefit of a doubt. See what happens when you try to have trust in untrustworthy people. Trusting the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs is like loaning money to a crackhead. You're not getting that money back, and you're not going to see the Cowboys win and perform well in the playoffs. That organization is disgraceful. An absolute joke. They embarrass themselves every year in the playoffs. I should have known better, but I thought Dallas could at least get to the NFC Championship. And you know what? I'm low-key upset because I was hoping that the 49ers would match up against Dallas in the NFC Championship. I wanted the joy, the satisfaction of seeing my favorite football team eliminate the team I hate the most three straight years in the playoffs in three different rounds. 2021 wild card, Niners took out the Cowboys. Last season, divisional, Niners took out the Cowboys. I was trying to make it 3-for-3. This time in the NFC Championship, I wanted to see that humiliation of the Dallas Cowboys, courtesy of my favorite football team. But the Green Bay Packers took the trash out in the first round. They fucked these guys up. 48-32? I didn't see that coming. I don't think anyone saw that coming. Certainly Dallas didn't see that shit coming, but it is what it is. Houston and Cleveland, same thing. I didn't think Houston was ready yet. I figured Flacco has been tearing it up the last month. The defense is really good in Cleveland. I thought the Browns were going to win. I had the Browns going all the way to the AFC Championship. You can't trust the Cleveland Browns in the playoffs either. It was an amazing coaching job, however. I will say this, Kevin Stefanski, I think D'Amico Ryans should be coach of the year. I think Coach Stefanski in Cleveland is a close second because you make the playoffs with four different quarterbacks, highlighted by a 38-39-year-old Joe Flacco, a guy that was sitting on his couch a month ago doing nothing, watching The Price is Right, scratching his balls. Next thing you know, he's on the field playing quarterback for the Cleveland Browns at a high level, out there turning back the clock, looking like Joe Flacco from 2012, the same Joe Flacco that unfortunately mopped the floor with my beloved San Francisco 49ers in Super Bowl 47. That's the way he looked. His play for the Cleveland Browns was reminiscent of that playoff run when Joe Flacco turned into 1984 Dan Marino and led the Baltimore Ravens to their second championship. I thought he was going to be able to continue that, not two pick sixes in that game, and they get mollywopped 45-14. And since we're already there talking about Cleveland and Houston, let's go ahead and recap all six of these games, starting with the first game of NFL Super Wild Card Weekend. Houston and Cleveland, NRG Stadium, whatever the fuck it's called these days, Houston, Texas. Like I said, I thought Cleveland and their number one defense, that's good on all three levels, Myles Garrett, Jeremiah Owusu-Kamara, my man from Notre Dame, and Denzel Ward in the secondary. I thought number one defense, Flacco was balling, the Browns shouldn't win this game. Nope. C.J. Stroud had a different idea. C.J. Stroud making his NFL playoff debut, you might have expected some jitters. But C.J. Stroud was as cool as the other side of the pillow. Rest in peace, Stuart Scott. 16 of 21, 274, four touchdowns, no turnovers, quarterback rating of 157.2. C.J. Stroud stood on business against the number one defense in the National Football League. Those numbers are crazy. Think about it. They scored 45. It could have been 60. If Dalton Schultz, the Texans tight end, doesn't drop a pass in the first half, first quarter, that could have been a touchdown. And then C.J. overthrew Nico Collins in the end zone in the second quarter. It very easily could have been 60 points scored against what is by the numbers the best defense in pro football. A rookie quarterback making his playoff debut puts up 45, could have had 60 against the number one defense in the NFL. That's fucking impressive. C.J. Stroud, sir, have yourself a day, young man. That was awesome. The defense, two pick sixes in this game. D'Amico Ryans got them guys playing good football. Derek Stingley shut down Amari Cooper. He covered him for about 80% of the snaps that Amari Cooper was on the field. He couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. He was ineffective. He was garbage. Completely erased in this game by the former third pick overall in the draft, Derek Stingley. Quiet as kept, the Houston Texans have built a pretty nice football team. A lot of good young players down there. Think about what Houston was a couple of years ago. A terrible football team in the aftermath of losing Deshaun Watson, who, oh, by the way, plays for the Cleveland Browns. Got signed for $230 million guaranteed. And what have the Browns gotten in return for that? Deshaun has either been hurt or largely ineffective. For $230 million guaranteed, the Cleveland Browns got one good half of football from Deshaun Watson against the Baltimore Ravens earlier this season. That's about it. But you think about how pathetic the Houston Texans were after they lost Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, David Johnson, J.J. Watt. They were fucking trash. A garbage, horrible, inept football team and franchise, but they turned it around. Complete 180. D'Amico Ryans as a head coach, awesome. C.J. Stroud at quarterback, phenomenal. Derek Stingley, Will Anderson, the rookie they took out of Alabama in the most recent draft, he's awesome. It's a good football team. Nico Collins, very good, very underrated wide receiver. Good football team in Houston. These guys are for real, and I salute it, and I respect it. Houston now moves on to the divisional round to play the number one seed Baltimore Ravens this Saturday. It's going to be on 4:30 ESPN/ABC. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman doing play-by-play and commentary for that game. Should be a good game. What wasn't a good game was Kansas City and Miami. As I said earlier, 100% predictable. This was too easy. There was no way. No chance in hell. I got a better chance of having a three-way with Ashanti and Maya than the Miami Dolphins did of coming into Arrowhead and winning a football game. The Miami Dolphins are frauds. Let's call it what it is. It's a fraudulent football team. Look at their win-loss record. Look how they played against non-playoff teams versus playoff teams. 1-6 this season against teams that made the playoffs. If you count the actual playoff loss to Kansas City, 26-7, and it wasn't even that close. The only real highlight for Miami in this game was a wobbly, underthrown, wounded duck of a pass from Tua Tagovailoa that was rescued out the air by Tyreek Hill, who then ran through the entire Chiefs defense to score the only touchdown of the game for Miami. Once upon a time, Miami was 9-3, coming off a victory versus the pitiful Washington Commanders, and then proceeded to lose three of the remaining five games on their schedule. They lost their hold, their grip of the AFC East. Buffalo came and took that away from them and won the division. The last game of the season on Sunday night down there in Miami, I knew right then and there, this team is going to be one and done in the playoffs. They can't. They're incapable. There's no way. They could not go on the road. They don't have the DNA. They don't have the quarterback. Is Tua Tagovailoa the long-term answer for the Miami Dolphins? That's a question they got to answer and figure out. He's due for an extension. Is he that guy? If you're a Dolphins fan, if you're a member of the Dolphins front office, that's the question you got to answer. Look at his performance this season. His performance as a quarterback mirrors the team's performance against good football teams all season long. His numbers all went down across the board whenever he played a real football team. They lost to Philadelphia. They lost to Kansas City in the regular season. They lost to Buffalo. They did beat Dallas. That's the one playoff team they beat. But once again, call it what it is. You can nickname that the fraudulent bowl, the inauthentic bowl, the fake, phony, illegitimate, the Fugazi bowl. A matchup of two teams that are more cubic zirconia than they are platinum diamonds. Fake-ass football team. Somebody had to win. It was Miami. But you kind of saw this coming. I saw this coming. They look great against teams like Denver and the Jets and the Patriots. They murdered them. Step up in weight class and see what happens. Every single time other than playing Dallas. And really, that's not even stepping up in weight class. They're the same team. They're both the same. So you can't name a good Miami Dolphins win the entire season. And I just never believed in them. I saw this outcome coming. The Chiefs' defense is good. Mahomes at home. The Chiefs are who they are. I don't count them out. As I said many times before, I still got PTSD from Super Bowl 54. Every time you think the Chiefs are going to lose, every time you're ready to put dirt on them in the grave and count them out, they rise like a phoenix. They rise from the ashes, and they somehow figure out a way, and they win. And that's who they are. The defense is carrying that team this season. The offense is pretty much pedestrian, which is crazy to say because you still got Mahomes and Kelce, Andy Reid calling plays. They ran the ball effectively, and this time of the year in the playoffs, that's the formula, that's the blueprint. It sounds cliche. You hear it all the time on TV, but that's how you win and lose playoff games. You got to run the ball and stop the opposing team from running the football. Rashee Rice, Isaiah Pacheco and company held it down. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a turnover late, but it didn't even matter. The game was already over. They ran the ball, they played defense, they shut Miami down, they made Tua try to beat them. He's not good enough to do that. And Kansas City wins 26-7. Good luck in the offseason, Miami. Try to figure some things out. And oh, by the way, the Miami Dolphins are still seeking their first playoff victory in 23 years. They haven't won a game since Jay Fiedler. They beat the Indianapolis Colts in 2002, 2001, that's the last time the Miami Dolphins have won a playoff game. That kind of futility is absurd. 23 years, no playoff wins? Got to figure some things out if you're in Miami. Moving forward, the next game on the playoff schedule. Now, it was scheduled to be Buffalo hosting Pittsburgh 1 o'clock on Sunday. Unfortunately, Buffalo was devastated by 4 feet of snow. The good people up there in Western New York completely smacked in the face by Mother Nature. 4 feet of snow. The game got moved from Sunday at 1 o'clock to Monday at 4:30, which prompted a litany of dumbass, nonsensical, illogical conspiracy theorists to question, how come the NFL moved the game in Buffalo for weather but didn't move the game in Kansas City? They're cheating for the Bills. This is bullshit. It's rigged. It's scripted. It's fixed. The NFL wants the Buffalo Bills to win. Let me tell you something. That game could have been played in a fucking parking garage at 2:30 in the morning. It doesn't matter. There was no way that Mason Rudolph was walking into upstate Western New York, Buffalo to be exact, and coming out with a playoff victory. I don't give a fuck when that game was going to be played. The Buffalo Bills were always going to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's just what it is. So many people are so stupid. People thought they moved the game to give Buffalo an advantage? What are you talking about? The reason the game got moved was because the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, decided it was a public safety issue for the fans to even attempt to play this game. That's a call by the governor. That had nothing to do with Roger Goodell or anybody in the National Football League. The governor of New York has no power, no authority, no jurisdiction over what takes place in Kansas City, Missouri. If the Chiefs game was going to get canceled, it was going to be canceled by the governor of Missouri. People should know these things. And besides, the weather in Kansas City was just cold. It was 0 degrees. You can play football in 0 degree weather. 4 feet of snow? Good luck with that. I know a lot of people say they like watching those snow games. I'm not sure if you want to see a football game in 4 feet of snow. What can you even accomplish with that much snow on the field? It's a public safety issue, and that's a call by the governor of New York. It has nothing to do with anything happening in Kansas City, Missouri. But I digress. Now that we got that out the way, the Bills and Steelers were canceled on Sunday, moved to Monday at 4:30. So the next game, if we continue in sequential order, Dallas, Texas, AT&T Stadium, the Green Bay Packers and the Dallas Cowboys. Can you believe this shit? Can you believe what went down in Jerry World? 48-32 and it wasn't even that close. It was 27-7 at halftime. 41-16. 41-16 in the middle of the third quarter. And yeah, Dallas got some garbage time points and Dak Prescott put up some, as Shannon Sharp calls it, empty calorie yards. I agree with that. That's all it is, empty calories. Meaningless, irrelevant, worthless. Technically, yeah, Dak threw for 400 yards. He also had a soul-crushing pick six, a 64-yard pick six going the other way. Darnell Savage for the Green Bay Packers took it all the way to the house. Dak Prescott had another interception in that game, two picks in that game. He was garbage for the first three quarters of that game, and by the time he picked it up and started playing better, the game was already over with. Dan Quinn, defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys, what the fuck? Six DBs on the field when Green Bay is lined up in 12 personnel. And for those who don't know what 12 personnel means, it's a fancy, complicated football way of saying one running back, two tight ends. Whenever you're lined up with that kind of personnel on the field, typically that means you're going to run the football. Go back and look at the highlights, the clips of that game. How many times was Aaron Jones 5, 6, 7 yards into the Cowboys defense before somebody even touched him? Numerous times this happened the entire game. 25 carries, a buck 18, 3 touchdowns. Aaron Jones destroyed the Dallas Cowboys, but specifically the Green Bay Packers up front annihilated Dallas, and their own defensive coordinator did them no favors. What kind of game plan was that? Are you kidding me? Are you serious? Then again, I shouldn't be surprised. Dan Quinn is 0-6 lifetime versus his former proteges, coaches that coached under him when he was the head coach in Atlanta in 2016, Kyle Shanahan, Mike McDaniel, and Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, the same Green Bay Packers team that chokeslammed the Dallas Cowboys through a table 48-32. 0-6 is Dan Quinn versus anybody from the Shanahan coaching tree. Can't get it done. Can't win against them. Remember what happened on October the 5th? San Francisco 42, Dallas 10. That Shanahan offense is complete kryptonite for Dan Quinn and whatever he's trying to do on defense. But that game plan in that game on Sunday was completely abysmal and just reckless, irresponsible, just stupid. What the fuck are you trying to do? I understand Dallas is limited from a personnel standpoint. Leighton Vander Esch didn't play in that game. They're a little bit light in their linebacking core. I get all that. You know, that's probably why he did what he had to do, but you got to figure something out. And in some cases, it looked kind of stubborn, like you're unwilling to change throughout the entire game. It didn't work, and the Cowboys got their asses kicked in that game. Jordan Love, similar numbers to C.J. Stroud, 16-21, about 240, three touchdown passes. And like I said earlier, he had fun out there. He did whatever he felt like doing. Honestly, the outcome of that game shouldn't be that surprising when you think about it. Look at the way Dallas played the entire season. In particular on defense, it was a boom or bust defense. Either they force a bunch of turnovers or they give up big plays consistently with regularity all season long. That's the way they play. Deron Bland is a boom or bust corner. Either he gives up a big play or he gets a pick six. It's one or the other. He really isn't that good of a cover corner. That's just what it is with Dallas. It's a team from a personnel standpoint. Look up and down their roster. They're not built to win football games this time of the year. They're not all that physical. They can't run the football either. Tony Pollard is not a feature every down running back. He's a change of pace guy. You bring him in every now and then. They missed Ezekiel Elliott. And I understand that Zeke fell off the last couple of years. He wasn't what he once was. Injuries took a toll on him. I get that. But the Cowboys never had a great running game all season. And that came back to bite them. They're one-dimensional. You're asking Dak Prescott to go out there and win the game every game. It's not going to do it, especially in the playoffs. Dak is 2-5 all-time in the playoffs. And those five games he lost, he was the drizzling shits in all five of those games, including this Packers game this past Sunday. He was awful. This team only looked good against bad football teams, similar to Miami. Like I said, when they played back in December, that was the Fugazi Bowl. The Miami Dolphins and the Dallas Cowboys. And Dallas lost that game. The Cowboys couldn't even beat another fraudulent football team. This is who they are. Every year people fall for this. I don't. I know what's going to happen. I see it coming. Beat up on some sorry ass football teams during the regular season. That's what they did. They beat the Giants twice. They beat New England. New England sucks. They beat the Jets. The Jets are garbage. They beat bad football teams all year long, and every single time they had to match up with a real football team, they lost. What is Dallas's best win this season? A Monday night game against the Chargers? They barely won that game. A month later, the Chargers fired their coach. They beat Philadelphia 33-13. We saw what the Eagles were down the stretch. That was in December. That was post-December 3rd. Philadelphia never recovered from that ass whooping on December 3rd, and Dallas took advantage of that. That's your best win? You beat the Philadelphia Eagles after the 49ers exposed them. Dallas lost to the Cardinals early in the season and lost pretty decisively. I mean, that game, they got outplayed by Arizona. They got outplayed, they got outcoached in this game against Green Bay in every single way possible. That's an ugly look for the Dallas Cowboys. Mike McCarthy, the head coach, on the hot seat. How could he not be? He's been there for the past three seasons. Here's a fun fact. The Dallas Cowboys are the first team since the NFL-AFL merger to win 12 games in three consecutive seasons and not even qualify for their conference championship. I'll say that again. The Dallas Cowboys are the first team since the NFL-AFL merger in 1970 to win 12 games in a season, three consecutive seasons, and not qualify for the conference championship in any of those three seasons. Dallas made some more history on Sunday. By losing to the Green Bay Packers, the Dallas Cowboys became the first team, the first number two seed, to lose to a number seven seed. Now, I realize this current playoff format has only been in practice for about 3-4 years now, but in the interest of being petty, I have to bring this up. Dallas is the first number two seed to lose to a number seven seed. I had confidence. Dallas, I believed in you. You betrayed my trust. I don't take that lightly. You betrayed my trust, Dallas. I believed in you. You motherfuckers owe me an apology. A handwritten 500-word essay about honor, courage, and commitment. You did not uphold your end of the bargain. I thought you were going to win. You went out there and got your monkey asses whipped by a number seven seed. What the fuck was that? Should have known better, though. I should have seen it coming. Dan Quinn does not match up well against Shanahan or his disciples. Dallas is always undisciplined, unprepared in the playoffs. Go back to that 2021 wild card loss to the 49ers. They had 14 penalties in that game. 14! This team is always undisciplined, unprepared, not ready. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you continue, if you're Dallas, if you're Jerry Jones, and you continue to employ Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott together, you are insane because it's not working. 3 years in a row, three unceremonious playoff exits by a team with Super Bowl aspirations. And all the idiots on television, everybody in the media loves to talk about Dallas being a legitimate threat, an option to win a Super Bowl. It's all hype. It's all for ratings. It's all for clicks, clickbaits, whatever you want to call it. They're not a real football team. They never have been since 1995, the last time they reached a conference championship. Got to go all the way back to the 90s for the last time Dallas had a real football team. It's going to be a long offseason in Dallas. A lot of questions to answer. Do you keep Mike McCarthy? Bill Belichick is available. So is Pete Carroll. Jim Harbaugh may or may not be available. He did take a meeting with the Chargers this week. There's always going to be talk about Jim Harbaugh coming back to the NFL. Personally, if I was him, I'd stay at Michigan. You're a made man. But if you're looking for a challenge, go back to the NFL. I'm a 49er fan. Anybody that knows me or listens to this podcast should know that by now. Once upon a time, Jim Harbaugh was the head coach of my beloved San Francisco 49ers. He compiled a win-loss record of 44 wins, 19 losses, one tie, 3 years in a row, three consecutive seasons. The 49ers reached the NFC Championship. One time got to a Super Bowl, unfortunately came up short against John Harbaugh and the Baltimore Ravens. Both of those Super Bowl losses against Baltimore and Kansas City have given me PTSD. I always say the Kansas City one did. It's both of them. I'm sick of both of those games, but different story. It is what it is. Dallas, figure it out. Or you got to figure something out in the offseason because this isn't working. Every year, you build your hopes up and get to the playoffs and get your asses handed to you. And I love to see it. Congratulations to the Green Bay Packers. Good job. Unfortunately for Green Bay, you now have to pay a visit to the California Bay Area and play the number one seed in the National Football Conference, the aforementioned San Francisco 49ers. We'll talk about that on the next podcast. I plan to preview the NFL divisional round. We'll save that for later. But Niners, Packers, another traditional NFL playoff matchup. I think this is the 10th time the 49ers and Packers have matched up in the playoffs. Same thing I said about Cowboys and Packers. Two signature franchises, two teams that matter, they're relevant. They mean something to the history of this sport and this great game. You cannot tell the story of the National Football League without talking about 49ers and Packers. It's going to be awesome. Now, let's move on to Detroit, Michigan, the nightcap on Sunday night. And in my opinion, my estimation, the best game of the weekend. I kind of had a feeling this was going to be the best game of the weekend as far as, you know, entertainment and being close and competitive. Detroit and Los Angeles, both teams, the Rams to be specific and exact, both teams came in red hot down the stretch playing good football. Somebody had to win. A battle of two quarterbacks that used to play for the opposing teams. Once upon a time, 2008, the Detroit Lions selected Matt Stafford, quarterback from the University of Georgia, number one overall. Eight years later, 2016, the Los Angeles Rams selected quarterback Jared Goff from Cal Berkeley to be their quarterback, their face of the franchise, and they played in a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. He threw for over 4,000 yards that season. Jared Goff is a good NFL quarterback. I've said this before. I am the president, chairman, CEO, and founder of the Jared Goff Fan Club. To me, an underrated quarterback, a guy that's better than people think or want to give credit to. But Sean McVay eventually got tired of him. He grew anxious. He realized, or he thought, we're not going to win a Super Bowl with this guy being our quarterback. We got there, and we only scored 3 points. A lot of that, in my opinion, had more to do with Bill Belichick out-coaching Sean McVay in that game than it did Jared Goff not playing well. But he became a scapegoat, and the Rams traded Jared Goff to Detroit for Matt Stafford and sent a bunch of draft picks over there. The Lions used the lion's share of those draft picks to build their football team up in the correct fashion. Dan Campbell, the head coach of the Detroit Lions, has those guys biting off kneecaps and playing good football. It's a physical football team on both sides, offensive line, defensive line. They got good players at the skill positions. Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Sam Laporta at tight end. This is a good football team. The Rams played well down the stretch, got off to a slow start, but made the playoffs. Matt Stafford resurrected his career after a down season a season ago. Puka Nacua has come out of nowhere as a rookie. If C.J. Stroud is going to be offensive rookie of the year for the AFC, the NFC has got to be Puka Nacua, not even close. Landslide. That guy is amazing, and he played his ass off. He balled in that game on Sunday night against Detroit. The playoffs, somebody got to win, somebody got to lose. Detroit pulled it out late. In my opinion, Sean McVay made a mistake down the stretch in the fourth quarter, fourth and 14, opted to punt, gave the ball back to Detroit, and never saw the ball again. That conservative play calling, to me, cost them. They moved the ball the entire game. It wasn't like Detroit shut them down. To me, the biggest reason I thought Detroit was going to lose this game, I feel like their secondary is suspect. I saw that all season long. Their secondary can be had. They got to get pressure. They got to get to the quarterback in order for their defense to function. You saw Matt Stafford out there throwing lasers the whole game, most of which to Puka Nacua. That combination, Detroit had no answer for. And Matt Stafford took a beating. He's a tough guy. He's a tough quarterback. He's shown that his entire career. At one point, had to go to the blue medical tent, took a vicious hit from Aiden Hutchinson, but got back up and got back in the game and came back and was still firing darts and lasers all over the field. But I feel like McVay's decision to be conservative on that fourth and 14 lost the football game for the Rams, opened the door for Detroit to win their first playoff game in 23 years. I called it on the last podcast. It was going to be an emotional scene in Detroit. The entire city of Detroit, the whole state of Michigan, came out in full effect, support their football team. This organization has fallen on hard times, notoriously bad over the past 30 years. In 2008, they went 0-16. They did not win a football game in one season. On that field in that game, you saw perhaps, not even perhaps, really, the two best quarterbacks in Detroit Lions history, Jared Goff and Matt Stafford. Unless you're an old-timer and you saw Bobby Lane play back in the day, these are the two best quarterbacks anybody's ever seen play for the Detroit Lions. With all due respect and apologies to Joey Harrington, John Kitna, Scott Mitchell, Charlie Batch, and a plethora of other horrible quarterbacks, these two, Goff and Stafford are the two best quarterbacks Detroit's had in the modern era. There should be no argument against that. And they put on a show. Detroit got off to a hot start, cooled off in the second half, didn't put up too many points in the second half, but they held on to win. They had just enough. And that place went ballistic. That place was crazy. That's one of those games I'm watching on TV and I'm thinking to myself, I wish I was there. I wish I was in that building. I wish I was at Ford Field, Detroit, Michigan last Sunday. That looked electric. That looked fun. That was awesome. And congratulations, man. Detroit, long time coming. You guys deserve this. I'm happy for y'all. Good job on that game. The Lions are moving on. The Rams put up a hell of a fight, but not enough. Detroit moving on. 24-23. Now we go to Monday. The game that was supposed to be played on Sunday got moved to Monday. It was still a lot of snow, cold as shit, but Bills Mafia, aka crazy drunken white folks, came out in full effect and went off. You see motherfuckers jumping off of snowbanks, going through flaming tables, completely intoxicated. You gotta believe that. Full of beer and blue cheese up there in Western New York. It was awesome. It's always fun seeing Bills Mafia go crazy. That's a fun bunch of people. Same thing. I watched them. I think to myself, I wish I was there. Now, I'm not going to jump through a table. I'm not jumping off a snowbank, especially through a flaming table. But I would sure as hell like to watch. I would like to be on board, on hand for the festivities and watch it at a safe, close distance. Some crazy, drunk-ass white folks throw themselves through tables. Moving on to the game, though. Buffalo and Pittsburgh went pretty much the way I thought it was going to go. I knew the Bills are going to win this game at home. Josh Allen, superb in the playoffs. And he continued his excellent play in the postseason in this game. A 52-yard rushing touchdown. 21 of 30, 203, three touchdown passes. And then 74 yards on the ground in total. The best player on that field, easily. Not even close, landslide. The best player on that football field in that game, quarterback number 17 from Wyoming, Josh Allen. He was awesome. And he's done that every single postseason he's participated in. Give Pittsburgh credit. That's a Mike Tomlin coach football team. They fought back from a 21-0 deficit to make it 21-17, make it respectable. Buffalo's defense has been beleaguered all season by injuries. And it kind of slowed down the second half. Pittsburgh got some things going. Mason Rudolph hit Deontay Johnson in the end zone for a 10-yard touchdown pass to make it a two-score game going into halftime. Pittsburgh later on put together a 12-play drive to make it 21-17. But then Buffalo responded back. They answered. They pretty much ended the game with Josh Allen completing a 17-yard touchdown pass to Khalil Shakur, spun out of a tackle and ran about 10 yards across the goal line and scored, and that was pretty much it. Buffalo goes on to win 31-17. It went the way I thought it was going to go. Like I said, I had no faith, no chance in hell that Mason Rudolph is walking into Buffalo and coming out victorious. Not going to happen. No way, no how. Buffalo's different at home, and they're the number two seed, and they got another home playoff game this weekend, against an old nemesis, Kansas City, Mahomes versus Allen. Again, every time these two quarterbacks match up, it's fireworks, it's fun, dynamic, explosive, memories. Some of the best playoff games we've ever seen have featured Kansas City and Buffalo, Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes. I can't wait to see what happens next. AKA the Kadarius Toney Bowl. If Kadarius Toney can line up properly, maybe this game would be in Kansas City. These two teams played during the regular season. Kadarius Toney lined up in the Bills secondary. And still, Kansas City still can't believe that the referees called offsides on that play. It negated the touchdown, a spectacular touchdown where Travis Kelce pitched it back about 20 yards on a lateral from the 10-yard line. Spectacular play, fun play, cool, awesome, exciting, interesting, fascinating. All that didn't count because Kadarius Toney was lined up in the end zone, offsides, neutral zone infraction, whatever. Illegal. You can't do that. A tough season for Kadarius Toney. Either he lines up offsides or he drops game-winning touchdown passes. But because of that, This game is going to be played in upstate Western New York in Buffalo. Mahomes got to go outside now. He got to go on the road. Never done that before in his entire playoff career. To this point, every playoff game Mahomes has played in, either a home game or a neutral site in the Super Bowl. It's going to be fun to see. Taylor Swift got to come see Bills Mafia. A lot of storylines, a lot of subplots. Fascinating, interesting, compelling football game taking place this weekend in Buffalo. Bills and Chiefs, I can't wait to see it. Which brings us to the conclusion of NFL Super Wild Card Weekend. Monday Night Football, ESPN/ABC, Tampa, Florida, Raymond James Stadium, home of the big-ass pirate ship. Baker Mayfield and your 2023 NFC South champion, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, hosting a reeling, fledgling, dwindling, downtrodden, abysmal, ramshackled football team known as the Philadelphia Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles. I saw this coming. I had a feeling. Two teams going in opposite directions down the stretch to finish the season. Tampa playing good football. I know nobody noticed it because they're only the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And without Tom Brady, nobody watches or pays attention to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers unless you're already a fan of them. Nobody really gives a fuck about the NFC South in general. But if you're a football fan, you know the Bucs were playing good football down the stretch defensively, only giving up 16.3 points per game. Going up against a team minus A.J. Brown, missed this game due to a knee injury. Quarterback Jalen Hurts fucked up his middle finger the previous week against the Giants, a game that Philadelphia lost. This team's coming in wounded, injured, and also depleted of confidence. Man, I tell you, December 3rd was a motherfucker, man. They never recovered from that. It reminds me of when Ronda Rousey was dominating and destroying every single woman put in front of her in MMA, in women's mixed martial arts, in the UFC. She kicked everybody's ass. She fucked people up left and right with regularity and consistency until she hit that roadblock, went overseas, went to Australia, and stepped in that cage with Holly Holm and got her head kicked off. And she never recovered from that. Damn near killed herself. Had thoughts of suicide after losing that fight to Holly Holm. Took a year off. Came back. Fought Amanda Nunes. Same thing. Got beat like a pinata. Got her monkey ass whipped by that dyke ass Brazilian chick. Amanda Nunes fucked Ronda Rousey up. Ronda Rousey never recovered from getting her ass whipped by Holly Holm, and the Eagles never got over the 49ers beating seven different shades of shit down their leg. They never got over it. A tailspin, a downward spiral, shambles. They fell apart. They collapsed internally. You hear stories about infighting and dissension among the ranks. They're not getting along with each other. You kind of saw that on the sideline with guys kind of talking to the quarterback, Jalen Hurts, a certain way. You saw some very acrimonious conversations taking place on the sideline. There's questions about the coach, Nick Sirianni. Is he fit for this job? Is he mature enough to be the head coach of a pro football team? Did he lose the team? Are the players tuning him out? Did he lose control of the football team? It certainly appeared that way down the stretch. They fell apart. They completely collapsed. The bottom fell out for the Philadelphia Eagles going into this game. And then during the game, all hell broke loose. The tush push didn't work. Their best offensive play. They tried to run down a two-point conversion down 16-9. Tampa Bay stopped it. That should have been a sign right there. Your most effective offensive play didn't work. Got shut down. The best play in your playbook is nine motherfuckers pushing Jalen Hurts in his ass forward. And it didn't work. It worked all season, but in the playoffs, Tampa shut it down. What about that Eagles running game? Kenneth Gainwell, DeAndre Swift, milk cartons, both of them non-existent, nowhere to be found. So, as I said earlier, in the playoffs, if you want to win, you have to run the ball and you have to stop the opposing team from running. Football, in my opinion, is, was, and always will be a game predicated off two basic principles: blocking and tackling. 9 times out of 10, the team that blocks and tackles better wins the football game. Philadelphia couldn't block. No holes, no running lanes for their running backs. At the same time, they had no answer for the blitz packages of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Todd Bowles coached circles around Nick Sirianni in this game. He undressed him. He made him look foolish. He destroyed him from a coaching standpoint. Todd Bowles, infinitely better than Nick Sirianni in this game and overall in general, really. Once again, said this on the previous podcast, what are the Philadelphia Eagles without Shane Steichen and Jonathan Gannon? Shane Steichen, the offensive coordinator from last season, went to Indianapolis, and the Colts were a better football team than people thought they were going to be. Jonathan Gannon went to Arizona. The Cardinals beat the Cowboys, and late in the season in Philadelphia, beat the Eagles. Nick Sirianni was a product of his assistant coaches from last season. Without them, what were the Philadelphia Eagles this season? A team that struggled to beat the Washington Commanders twice. They had 0 decisive wins all season long, and everybody said, myself included, I'll own this. I'll be accountable on this, because I thought Philadelphia was at least good enough to get to the divisional NFC championship. Who knows? I kept saying all season long, it's going to be San Francisco and Philadelphia in a rematch again. Hopefully, preferably this time in Santa Clara as opposed to Philadelphia. But when I really look back and reflect on it, the Eagles are who we thought they were. An average football team with a lot of deficiencies, an inconsistent run game, and they don't really scare you when you sit down and look at the tape. They didn't destroy or blow anybody out the entire season. They won a lot of games in the fourth quarter, sometimes by fluke, sometimes by just outlasting the opponent. And they got by with that for 10 wins early in the season. And then it all fell apart. After they lost to San Francisco, the only game they won was against the Giants. Congratulations, you beat Tommy DeVito. And later on, Tyrod Taylor. Congratulations, at home on Christmas. And even that game was kind of close in the second half. The Eagles are simply not that good. To me, this game was best summed up by a sequence of plays. In the third quarter, Philadelphia was routinely backed up in their own end zone, their own goal line, in the shadows of their goal line. They couldn't get anything going, and neither could the Buccaneers. The Eagles' defense temporarily kept them in the game at 16-9. It's a one-score football game. 3 plays on this drive. This drive was hideous. From a play calling standpoint, from an execution standpoint, absolutely dreadful. The first play, Kenneth Gainwell loses yards on a rushing attempt. The second play, Jalen Hurts, incomplete pass. The clock stops. Now you're backed up, third and long, third and about 14. They call a pass play. Protection gets blown up. Tampa comes on the blitz again. Hurts retreats back into the end zone, tries a desperation pass to get the ball out of his hands. The ball does not reach the line of scrimmage. Intentional grounding in the end zone as a safety. 2 points for Tampa Bay. Now it's 18-9 on the ensuing possession. A free kick from Philadelphia to Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers get the ball back. Baker Mayfield completes a simple out pattern that results in a touchdown because the Eagles' tackling in this game was offensive. Don't believe me? Ask Ray Lewis how offensive it was to watch the Eagles attempt to tackle people, especially on this play. Buccaneers rookie wide receiver Trey Palmer made the catch and did the rest, and James Bradbury and company, and he was atrocious the entire game. He's been a complete disaster ever since last year's Super Bowl when he got flagged for a PI that set up a Chiefs touchdown, the go-ahead touchdown in that game. James Bradbury cannot and will not be in an Eagles uniform next season. If he somehow makes that 53-man roster next season in Philadelphia, somebody's going to take a shot at him. Eagles fans are crazy. His house will get blown up if he somehow makes that roster next season. He cannot play for the Eagles ever again. He was god-awful on Monday night. Missed tackles, missed assignments. What the fuck? Jesus Christ. James Bradbury sucked. No other way to put it. He got benched at one point in this game. He was garbage. And the tackling, the effort on that play and throughout the game. That was a trend for the entire game. Once again, hate to sound like a broken record, football is, was, and always will be about blocking and tackling. If you can't block and you can't tackle, you're not going to win. And the end result is a 32-9 evisceration, annihilation, decapitation, castration, humiliation on Monday Night Football. When the second half began, the Philadelphia Eagles needed restoration work from their quarterback Jalen Hurts to save their season, and what they got instead was a demolition job courtesy of Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 22-37, 356, three touchdown passes, no turnovers. Baker Mayfield was a god on that field on Monday night. He was the best player in that game. This guy's had eight different coaches in his NFL career. He's played for three different teams, a former number one overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner. There's some talent there. And really, I'm watching that game, I'm thinking to myself, it's amazing that Baker Mayfield can even do what he does. You look at him, his physical size and stature. He's barely 6 feet tall. He might be 5'11 on a good day. He's short, and you're playing quarterback. I said the same thing earlier talking about Bryce Young. Short quarterbacks, to me, just don't appeal. If I was ever a GM of a football team, I would never draft a quarterback under 6 feet one. It's physically difficult for them to even see over the line and look downfield. It's amazing that someone like Baker Mayfield can do what he does at his size and stature. And on Monday night against Philadelphia, he was a wizard out there, and they had no answer for him. And it was fun to watch. And the Eagles did everything wrong in that game. 0-9 on third down, 0-2 on fourth down. On two separate plays, the same guy, Cam Jurgens, an offensive lineman for Philadelphia, was an ineligible man downfield. This happened twice. The same dude. The tush push, like I said earlier, that got stopped. That never gets stopped. They looked soft. They looked weak. They looked like they gave up. A beaten and defeated football team that looked like they were ready for the season to be over with. That was embarrassing. If you're an Eagles fan, you're probably very pissed off right now. And a soul-crushing, deflating, emasculating way for their season to come to an end. But in all intents and purposes, the Eagles' season ended on December 3rd. One more note about that game. Walking off the field, beaten and defeated, vanquished from the NFL playoffs, an Eagles fan threw popcorn at Nick Sirianni. An Eagles fan threw popcorn at his own head coach. Stay classy, Philadelphia. Seasons come to an end only so long that fake teams can pretend. Began the season 10-1, finished the season 1-6. Grand opening, grand closing. So now our divisional matchups are all set. On the NFC side, the mighty, my beloved, the five-time Super Bowl champion San Francisco 49ers embark on a journey that hopefully concludes in Las Vegas, Nevada on the second Sunday in February, hoisting the Lombardi Trophy for the sixth time in franchise history, that elusive sixth championship. I feel like we've been on a quest for six for a long fucking time. It needs to end. The Niners begin that quest for six by hosting the Green Bay Packers, number one seed, number seven seed. We'll get to that later. We'll talk about that in a follow-up podcast. On the opposite end of the spectrum, the Detroit Lions are hosting a divisional playoff game. We've never said that before. Well, since 1991, but we haven't said that in a long fucking time. The Lions are hosting another playoff game, this time against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the AFC side, Kansas City and Buffalo, and then Houston and Baltimore. Great matchups. A lot of good football left to be played. Who knows what's going to happen? People like me can talk into a microphone and tell you our predictions, prognostications. We can pontificate all day. We don't know. No one knows. Except for whoever wrote the script, right? And with all that being said, that concludes this episode of the Dion Gordon Podcast. Eternally grateful, always humble, and very much appreciative. And remember, at all times, tread lightly like a woodpecker with a headache. Until next time, picture me rolling. I'm out.